Accession number 27741, Reel 6.
This is Reel 6 with the Reverend Michael Lepage.
Lepage.
So now we've got you going, you've retrained on a Hellcats, and you're going to the Emperor.
Yes, that was in Milos, in the Aegean. We were boarded on the HMS Emperor at Alexandria, and we went off up to Milos for the chasing the Germans out of the islands of the Aegean. There for 11, nearly 2 weeks continuous operation, which was, I think, a record for any carrier in the force.
What does that mean, continuous operation?
Well, we were on call every day. Normally, we wouldn't be on ops operations for more than 2 or 3 days in a carrier, and then you withdraw for refurbishment and so on. But the Hellcats were quite sturdy, and the ground staff, or the hangar staff, working overtime, keeping them all operational and serviced and oiled and everything. So we were able to keep going.
Would you fly more than one sortie a day?
I think not, no. I've got here, yes, there is one here, tactical reconnaissance, both on January the 10th. But that must have been back at base in Northern Ireland, I think, because by January we were back home. This was October I'm talking of, aren't I? October, here we are. 25, no, yes, so it was one day, 2 days, 3 days. Oh, yes, we did fly twice a day then. Dive bombing, strafing in the morning, and fighter escort in the afternoon.
Fighter escort, what would that?
They were bow fighters. I don't know what they were going for, but I was escorting them somewhere, providing cover for them.
Why would a Hellcat escort a bow fighter?
Ask me another. Well, that would be a bit more manoeuvrable, but or else they were too heavily laden to be able to reply. But keeping off the Messerschmitts and fighter escort here again. But mostly it was dive bombing and strafing, Milos.
And again, you made no contact with enemy planes?
Not with aircraft, no, but there was plenty of flak coming up from the ground.
Were you taught how to deal with flak?
No, well, you were just told to weave, you know, you don't fly straight and level. That's sort of common sense, really.
And what about tracer? If you saw tracer come up, you did your best to avoid it?
Well, you haven't time, and you just got to keep weaving. It's a strange sensation. You see it coming very slow at first, and then suddenly it goes whizzing past the wing. A bit unnerving.
Was your plane ever hit by fragments or bullets?
Not in those occasions. No, I got hit later, but that was in Japan by a Zero.
And landing the Seafire, you found a bit rocky. What was it like now landing the Hellcat?
Well, the Hellcat very much easier. I think I was explaining how the undercarriage was much more helpful, staying down when you hit the deck, and the hook coming out after the wheel meant that you could mostly catch a wire, which you didn't always with the Seafire because of the float. So, I don't think I had any prangs with the Hellcat.
Did you ever have to go around again?
No.
So
not that I remember, but then my memory is not all it used to be. I see I did fly a Swordfish in November that year to Cairo from Dakela. I don't know why I did that. And a Walrus. Oh, dear. Well, I can't have been piloting. No, I was the second pilot. The old Walrus was a fine old aircraft.
What was that?
It was a seaplane, float with a big hull, a biplane with a pusher engine behind the wings, so that it pushed the thing along. And a real old workhorse especially for retrieving pilots ditched in the sea, because it could land on the water and pick up a stranded pilot.
And you flew that out there?
No, I was second pilot. You know, I was flying it, but not in charge.
Mm-hmm. If we go to sort of day-to-day life on the ship, what about mail, your communications with the UK? How did that work?
Well, yes, there were a very strange system. I think it was in the Med as well, but certainly later, we used to write on a special form called an aerogram, which was a sort of A4 piece of photocopyable paper. And it was then photographed and sent home on a mini film, a very small microfilm, and then enlarged and sent to the recipient, or my parents or whoever, back home. They kept them a bit. I don't think I've got any left now, though. But all you had was just one side of a paper, limited, and, of course, very open to everybody who wanted to read it.
And I suppose it was censored by someone on the ship?
All the mail, we had to do, the officers all had to censor the men's mail, but then they, especially when they were writing on ordinary letters, so we just had to, we were trusted to do our own censoring, really. Obviously no place names, no nothing at all to give away any kind of secret.
What was it like censoring the...
Unpleasant, but...
What kind of things?
A duty. Usually a great pile of mail was put on the wardroom on the table, and we all took a bunch and did them each. It was just had to read through quickly, but mostly they were just letters to their sweethearts and or wives and family. So there was nothing much in them.
You'd never share a particularly juicy one?
No.
You respected the...
Oh, yes. Mm. The only thing we shared was the things that were on the back of the envelope, sealed with a loving kiss, Swalk, or what were the other ones?
Burma. There was
Burma, yes.
Be undressed and ready, my angel. Yes. I remember those. Food parcels? Did you get any food parcels?
No, we didn't need those. We had food on deck, on board ship.
It was?
Oh, yes.
What sort of food was it?
Oh, the only thing I remember was that the cheese had often been frozen, and when you tried to cut it, it all broke away in flakes. But no, we got very good food.
Out of tins or fresh? It wouldn't have been fresh food.
Well, it was frozen. They had a big freezer store. Americans sort of that, yeah. They had to have ice cream wherever they went, so they had to have a freezer.
But you weren't. This wasn't an American ship. Oh, I suppose. Well, it was
an American-built ship, wasn't it? Yes.
Yeah. What about? Did you have South African or Australians or New Zealanders?
Yeah, we had. I think this was on Emperor. We had a South African Marine officer, Ron Reen. I'm not quite sure what he was there to do, but he was sort of attached to the ship's company. And in 800 Squadron, when I joined, there were six Dutchmen, Dutch pilots, Helsingfors, De Witt, Poublon. Some of them had come from Indonesia, from the Dutch East Indies. And they were a pretty wild bunch, but their senior pilot, De Witt, had his head screwed on.
This was when you were on Seafires?
No, this was Hellcats.
This was Hellcats.
800.
Sorry, 800. What was their flying... discipline like? You said they were a wild bunch. Were they a wild bunch in the air?
No, they were all right in the air, but except that they used to leave their RT sometimes. If you left it on, you blocked everybody else on that wavelength, so you couldn't get a cheap in. And you couldn't always tell. I mean, you had a little switch on the front of the mic on the front of your face, which was attached to the goggles and the helmet. So you didn't always know if you'd left it on. And, of course, you couldn't hear anybody to tell you to turn it thing off.
So when you did turn it off, you'd get a lot of abuse for sort of leaving it on.
Well, nobody knew who it was, you see, and unless they later went round ringing everybody up and getting replies from. But it didn't happen very often.
Mm. When you went up on a sortie, how many aircraft would fly together?
Well, always more than one. I mean, a flight was two aircraft, and a squadron. The squadron was about 20. A flight, what was it? Four aircraft was a two flights was a, I forgot what the name was, a section. So we were always watching each other's tail, in theory.
So in these operations over Milos, how many would you, would never go up as an entire squadron?
No, it wouldn't be more than probably four at a time, perhaps. I don't remember now, but certainly, yes, there were more than, I mean, there would be two or four.
And were you taught any survival techniques? Did, I mean, if you crashed into the sea, was there any
Not so much into the sea. Well, we had Mae West. We had a jungle survival course, but that was in Ceylon the following year. I'll tell you more about that later, perhaps. But because we were flying near the jungle over Burma and over Ceylon.
But over the Mediterranean, they figured that if you crashed into the sea, you didn't have a little dinghy or anything like that.
No. Just a Mae West, which was an inflatable jacket.
And were any of your colleagues shot down and rescued from the sea? Do you remember that?
Some were shot down, but I don't remember any being rescued, no. I think they were all killed before they got to the sea, the ones I remember. No, I don't remember any rescues.
And what would you be wearing if you were flying in the Mediterranean arena? You were. What was your, when you went up to get, when you went off in a sortie, what would you actually be wearing?
I think we were advised to wear long trousers because of the burns if you did catch fire, and long sleeves, but obviously we kept it down to a minimum and wore shorts on the ship. The Navy had various rigs. Tropical rig was white shorts and white stockings, white shirt with short sleeves. But I think we wore khaki for a lot of the time when we were on duty.
So that campaign is successful. The Germans are driven out, I assume.
Yes, that was finished in November.
Do you remember, do any of those missions stick vividly in your mind? The
not
bombing
really, no, dive bombing, strafing. I remember the flak coming up, but I don't remember much about Milos, this little island way down below, 8,000-10,000 feet below. We never landed there. And then came to an end in November, and we came back to England. I remember flying off Emperor November 29th, I see here, and we landed in Cornwall at St. Medin, which was a naval air station then. And I can remember seeing the, after 6-8 months in the brown terrain of the Mediterranean, suddenly the green fields of old England were an absolute sight for sore eyes, and especially Cornwall, of course, in November was quite green, and all little patchwork of fields. Oh, wonderful. That was quite a lasting memory. That was November 29, then back to the Emperor and up to Longkish. St. Merin to Longkish again in Northern Ireland, where we went while the ship went in for refit. I think to Newport that time.
And you were then just shore-based for a while the ship...
We were then shore-based through December, January, until we were ready to go. We had to be kept doing something, you know.
So what did you do? What was the...
Well, rocket projectile firing.
Actually, we haven't talked about that, actually. What it was like to fire... To fire rockets from Hellcat, and also whether the Hellcat was launched in a different way to the Sea Fire.
Not all the time. I mean, quite often you just do a conventional takeoff. But if there was a slightly less, not enough wind, you had to steam into wind, full throttle, and the carrier doing its best. It couldn't do much more than about 18 knots, so when there was no wind over the sea, it was touch and go whether we could fly, really, because you had to have airspeed by the time we got to the end. So we used to have a thing called an accelerator, forward on the port side of the carrier deck, which was a little hook in a groove in the flight deck, with a cylinder accelerating device under the flight deck. From the hook, a noose was fitted to the two hooks underneath the wings, one under each wing, and over the hook in the deck. And when you would get into the aircraft, rev up to full throttle, put your head back against the headrest, really firmly back, and then put your right hand up in the air. And that gave the signal to the officer or whoever was operating the accelerator to press the button, and the thing went off. And by the end of the run, which was only about 100 feet, you had airspeed, which was a very painless way of getting airborne because you didn't have to worry about keeping straight. But again, when you got to the end of the deck, you probably sank out of sight of anybody on the deck. And you hoped you'd get your undercarriage up quickly and hope that you'd got enough airspeed.
So, I mean, the strop would drop into the sea, or...?
It was usually attached with a retrieval device, a little bit of string where they pulled it back up on board.
So you had to get the aircraft, the undercarriage up immediately. You felt the plane...
Well, you always did that anyway, with taking off.
Yeah.
Because an undercarriage down, if you hit the water or the field or a tree or anything, obviously it would tip you over. So it was always, if you watch aircraft taking off at Heathrow now, you see how the undercarriage comes up pretty quickly.
And the G-force, you felt the G, I suppose, as this thing rushed you forward?
Yes, you had. I mean, if you didn't have your head rammed back, you'd certainly notice it. Because it was an accelerating speed. It wasn't just a single speed. It shot you from 0 to 80 miles or knots in about 3 or 4 seconds. Yeah. So it was quite vicious. But it was, to say, a good, painless way of getting off.
I mean, last thing before we leave the Emperor, what was it like washing and showering and, I mean, keeping physically clean and
we had good conditions on the whole. I can't remember the showers. Everything was a bit cramped. There wasn't an awful lot of room, and the gangways and the wardroom wasn't all that big, but it was enough for us. And we each had a little desk, fold-in desk, we could keep our valuables, and a bunk, three bunks, one above the other. I think I had the top one, I can't remember. We got on well. And then there were occasional leave, not so much in, as we did go to Cairo once, but I described the leave we had in Ceylon and southern India. That was the most memorable one.
But all these men grouped together in pretty stressful conditions on a ship, fighting. People got on?
Oh, yes.
In those days you did?
Yes, well, you had to. The wardroom was the place where we all met, of course, for all the pilots and the ship's company. But not the men. I mean, the petty officers had their mess, and the chief petty officers, and the men had their mess decks.
But amongst officers, you all got on. You don't remember, you know, people are different. You must have been some people who were more difficult to rub along with.
Yes, but we were all motivated, you see, in one direction. I mean, I think people only squabble when they haven't got anything enough to do. But if we're all aiming in one direction, you don't have time to squabble amongst yourselves. That's the sort of theory. But there were some we got on better than others. Most of us had one or two whom we used to go walks with if we got ashore or go up, but on the whole we stuck together most of the time.
So the ship then returns to
back
England.
To England to
you fly
Cornwall.
Off and you land in Cornwall. How long did you stay in Cornwall?
No, not only just had lunch, I think, and then
flew on
to Northern Ireland.
I mean, and at this time, of course, there would be absolutely no worry of other planes.
No, this was.
End of 44, beginning of November 44.
Yes, the war was over in England, in Europe.
Yeah.
But not for us. We part of the forgotten army.
So tell me about it. You come back to Lankesh, and there you're waiting for 2 or 3 months while the ship is being
refitted.
And in that time, you're presumably you're still flying.
Oh yes, we're keeping our hand in very much so. We left for Colombo in end of March. 45. I see here we got to Colombo on April 3rd.
But I'm just thinking of that winter period from, say, November through until you set sail. You'd have set sail, what, about in January, I suppose?
Well, I see now we got to Colombo on March 27th. So
that would have taken a month at most, probably.
Yes, we left England. My last trip in England was February the 20th. Flew to from Anthorn in Cumbria.
But I was just thinking of that 3 months in Ireland. Then what would how did
well
they
we were
what
doing?
What were you training?
Working at yes, formation flying, more dummy deck landings, dummy dive bombing. I did an oxygen climb again. Camera exercise, rocket projectile firing, all these sort of things that we were going to might be having to use. Formation flying.
You'd used the rockets in anger in Milos, hadn't you?
No, I think we were mostly bombing there. I don't think we had rockets, as far as I remember, but I may be wrong.
All right.
Because we were too high, you see, we were fairly high up.
Of course, yeah.
So, yes, we were kept busy. And
did you go home for leave?
I think we must have had a bit of leave at some stage. There was that's right, over a very that was a very cold winter. Was it 45 or
44,
am I thinking
45.
The one before 45?
Don't know.
There was one very cold winter then when we had some super cooled water droplets, which means a cloud composed of water vapor, but it's actually below freezing, but they won't form ice until they hit something such as the air screw or the leading edge of a wing. So when the aircraft starts up, this we found out when we were at Anthorn in Cumbria trying to wait to get back to Northern Ireland, we found that as you started up the air screw, bits of ice started flying off in all directions. And obviously, if we'd taken off, the leading edge of the wing would have built up and changed the trim of the aircraft completely. So we were grounded virtually. And then I think on the next time, when I did have some leave, as you say, I wanted to get back home to Dorset. There was an aircraft wanting to be flown to Glasgow. So I flew from, three or four of us flew from Lancash to what's now Prestwick, I suppose, or one of the airports around Glasgow. We then caught the train for London for Euston from Glasgow. No heating. It was freezing outside. fortunately, having flown from Northern Ireland, we all had our flying gear. I had my flying boots on. Lovely. Sheepskin boots. Got to London and there'd been a raid the night before, so the train was slower and slower and slower, and I was hoping to have caught a train at midday from Waterloo down to Devon. Instead, I got the 6 o'clock, the last one, got to Axminster in Devon, and found that it was all iced up. There were no buses running. There was one taxi, but it was full up. Somebody I knew, but he said, "I'm sorry, we just haven't got room." So I lived about 5 miles away. I had to walk, having been up all night the previous night in that terrible freezing train. Got in about 3 o'clock in the morning, I think, and
wearing
my boots and trudging through 3 feet of snow in some places. I was absolutely whacked when I got home. Slept till next day afternoon, I think. I remember that journey.
I bet.
But that was only a one-off. That was quite a cold winter. That must have been 44, was it, I think? 44, 45, probably.
Did you have anyone who was waiting for you? Did you have a girlfriend or a fiancée that was...
No, my parents were waiting, but they couldn't get the car out. Excuse me. And there were, anyway, petrol rationing meant that... and they didn't... No mobile phones. They didn't know when I was coming.
No, I'm sorry, I meant waiting. Did you have a girlfriend who was...
in the wings?
Yes.
Excuse me. No, I don't think... I think I was rather a one-off at that time, an individualist. I Most of the others had a girlfriend somewhere. But not until after the war. Sorry.
Do you want me to stop?
It'll clear itself in a minute, I think.
Got some snow falling.
Oh.
Yeah. So you come home. And how do people receive you now? The war is coming to an end. You're a pilot. Pilots are very popular. Were you in any way regarded as a hero, or did you just keep it all very low key?
I really can't remember much about what happened at home. I don't think it was very long, probably only a week or so, because we were being set to go carry on the war out in the Pacific area, in the Indian Ocean.
And you knew that this was where your next destination would be?
I don't think so. No, we were just but we weren't. Nobody was being demobbed then. Not until after the war finished in the Pacific. So we just prepared ourselves for. See, February the 20th. Yes, I can't see what dates it was there, but no, I think we went had a week at home, and back. Dorset in the winter was very difficult. My parents were quite out in the 3 miles out of Lyme Regis, 7 miles from Bridport, and petrol rationing meant that they couldn't move about too much. We survived. Country was much easier than the town in the war because we had the odd brace of pheasant from the from the estate, or a rabbit. My mother kept chickens, so we didn't do too badly.
And did you pray together? Your father was a...
Yes, he was a minister, rector of a parish.
Did he bless you every time you went away?
I'm sure he did in himself, but the church was nice to come home to a peaceful setting once more.
And when you left to go back, do you remember it as being a sort of special emotional
time? I don't remember anything at all, no. I suppose he took me to the station probably, and mother was the one affected more than others, obviously. Both sons away out and having lost her daughter at the beginning of the war, it was hard on her. Mm.
Can you remember when you were first told that you were going out to the Far East?
No. We were never told until we were on board ship, really, where we were going, what we were doing.
And I suppose you must have been issued with tropical kit, and this must have been, but maybe that was done on the ship.
Yeah, we probably had that anyway, yes. And then there were slops, they were known as the naval shops. Versions, you could buy things. Malta, I remember buying equipment at Malta, a very good slot shop there.
Was that on the way out?
Yeah, that was the previous
trip.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you remember of the voyage out?
To Colombo?
Yeah.
Very little. It was just straight through the Med, through the canal, which was interesting, the first time we'd been through, down to Aden, and off and through to Colombo. But I'm afraid I remember very little. We got to Cochin first in March that year, but no flying there. I don't know why we called in, whether we had stores to offload or what. It was very, very hot there. I remember that's the only thing I can remember, because it's sort of landlocked harbour, and it was in the hot season, March, and we could hardly sleep, it was so hot.
The sea temperature, you said, was very high.
Yeah, 90, 91, I think. Mm. That was inside the harbour. We were docked alongside. And then on to Colombo, March 27th. And we flew off at Colombo to the a strip in the middle of the town, really. It was had been a golf course, ladies' golf course and something else, a race course or something. They had cleared it off and made a runway for us. And there was a mess wardroom in the local house. I've still got a sketch of it. I did a pencil sketch of that in my books.